Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Tommy, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Dad, and everybody listening to our little podcast.
Yeah, it's been quite a year. A lot of new cars were introduced, Tommy, but a lot of cool cars went to the graveyard up in the sky.
Yeah, we had a lot of really big names die this year. And that's really sad because whenever a car dies, of course, as car enthusiasts, we feel it in our hearts a little bit. And of course, it's one thing when like an Altima dies. It's another thing when a Camaro dies. So we want to talk a little bit about that. But we're also going to talk about our two latest purchases, one of which was a complete surprise to me. And the other one was a complete surprise to you, but hopefully a good surprise because it's the hottest vehicle so far this year.
Yeah, and let's finish off with the cars we're looking forward to driving this year.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, well, let's start with the cars that we bid adieu to. You want to go down the list?
So Car and Driver put this list together.
Okay.
These are the vehicles dead for 2025. There's a lot on there. Now let's start with Audi, right? That's a nice place to start.
Yeah.
The A5, the S5, the RS5 Coupe, and the RS5 Convertible. So the two-door kind of mid-size Audi is no more. Now this is a really sad thing for me, Dad, because I was pretty young when the A5 debuted, you know, some 15 years ago now, and I remember being so excited when that car came out with those Tony Stark LEDs, and you can get that S5 with that V8. It was such a special car. It's one of your dream cars, do you remember?
It's definitely one of my dream cars, and I think what happened with the Audis is that they were the right car for the right time. And it's not just happening with Audi, Tommy. It's happening with everything, right? Especially the fast versions of them, right? Those cars just tore it up. They were stylish. They were, dare I say, cool. They were fast. But then kind of when Tesla came along with the Model 3 and the Model 3 Performance, it just rewrote the book on performance. And these cars that once upon a time were the cool kids in town just started to look dated and stodgy and old. And Audi's kind of in the process of reinventing their lineup. And I think that's a good thing. I just drove the Q6, which is basically the replacement for the
e-tron.
Yeah, sorry, Q6 e-tron, which is a replacement for the Q5, which is all electric. They're doing, you know, they're in the process of reinventing themselves. And as you know, Audi's part of the Volkswagen Group, and the Volkswagen Group, along with every German manufacturer, has been struggling in this time of transition from internal combustion to electric. And I just feel like this is part of that process.
I think that, you know, the peak Audi era was like 2008 through 2015. And when I say peak Audi, I mean peak Audi of the modern times, not like the 1980s Sport Quattros, which were cool. But when you think of like, I keep coming back to this, but the Iron Man Audi when the R8 made its debut with those.
Yeah, that was the high watermark.
Yeah, it was super cool.
The R8 and then the subsequent generations, right?
And everything was kind of modeled after the R8. And I always thought like when the A5 debuted, it kind of looked like a baby R8 and it had these great haunches and these cool headlights and this beautiful rear end. And the S5 was even better and the RS5 was even better than that. The problem is that Americans in recent years haven't bought two doors. You know, there's a reason that the A4 and the A6 are sticking around, but the A5 has died. And the other problem is I think that Audi kind of took that design language and they brought it as far as they could. And that kind of peaked like in 2015, 2016, 2017. And now it's just been very derivative. So it's like we need another era of Audi. We need another stunner. The problem is that these latest Audis that are coming out, like the Q4 and the Q6 you drove, they don't have that.
E-tron.
Yeah, they don't have that wow factor that the R8 had when it debuted in 2008. Well, and I think that Audi needs a halo car to kind of drive the excitement around the brand.
Well, they have the e-tron, which is basically, you know, the Audi version of the Taycan.
But it doesn't have the same pop that R8 had. You know, people look at it as kind of a rebrand Kroger brand Porsche. We need something that's just the wow factor that gets people excited about the brand again.
And let's face it, the Taycan isn't selling all that well to begin with.
Yeah.
And now you're doing kind of, you know, an Audi version of that. And the other problem was Audi, I remember seeing the very first concept for the e-tron and it was stunning. They wheeled it into the LA Auto Show. And then for some reason, I remember this, they wheeled it out a day early. It didn't even stick around the whole time. And I think it was just, it overshadowed the Taycan. And so they kind of toned it down. So you've got a car that's basically, you know, a brother or sister car to the Taycan, but that can't overshadow its bigger or older
sister.
Yes, that's
the problem. Yeah.
And so you don't really have a proper halo car like the R8, right, which just redefined what an Audi could be.
But the thing about the R8 that worked is you could make the same argument with the R8 because it was more or less a tuned-down Gallardo, right? It had the same engine placement and smaller engines. It had different design than the Gallardo, but in a lot of ways it was the cheaper, more affordable cousin. However, it had such a different character than the Lamborghini that it somehow worked. It was a little bit more stealth wealth, a little bit more class. And that's what's missing.
I like that, stealth wealth.
That's what's missing with that the sporty e-tron.
Well, there's one word that it was that the Lamborghini wasn't, at least at that point, and that's reliable, right? When you bought the Lamborghini.
At
that point, Lamborghini hadn't been owned that long by the Volkswagen Group, and they were still trying to sort out, you know, the old Lamborghini reliability issues.
You're forgetting, though, the early R8s had this, they had two transmissions.
Yeah.
They had the manual transmission, which might be one of the greatest manuals in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. Gated six speed. Beautiful. Remember driving that?
Like, I remember.
You described it, the bolt-like action.
Yeah, it was the best transmission I've ever driven.
And then you had the R-tronic automatic, which was a dumpster fire. It was a single-clutch automated manual that was garbage. And you see that in the secondhand values. Like, you can get an R-tronic R8 for 55 or 60 grand. The manual versions are going to be, in some cases, double that. That's how much of a premium that the sticks have.
Yeah, I mean, now we're talking about the death of a car that happened a long time ago. Keep going.
So A5 will be missed. That's sad. Bugatti Chiron, okay, 500-unit run. These cars are so far from attainable for me that I've never been excited about any Bugatti.
What is it with all these YouTubers buying Veyrons? When did that become a thing?
Well, for a long time, I think, and as is the case, we all grew up under the Top Gear era.
Yeah.
And we all grew up seeing that James May Veyron
video where he takes it on that long track.
The Volkswagen Oval and gets it to 250 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And that clip has become so iconic in the brains of people in the 20s and the 30s that it really has. That was kind of my poster child car.
I get that.
That was your Countach, or what was before the Countach? You're old enough. The covered wagon. That was your covered wagon. Exactly. The sporty covered wagon, you know, the one that was pulled by that racehorse. So the Chiron was that to my generation.
Hey, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, and there's this like incredible renaissance of old Lamborghinis that people are now buying and are collecting and are treating with much relevance and much respect. But here's what I think happened. When I was in my era, right, the Countach was the and the Testarossa, those were the kind of
the pioneer days.
Yeah, these were the cars that were on people's walls.
Sure.
And you know, now the generation, let's see, the guys in their 40s and 50s, right? Those guys are now collecting those cars because they can afford those cars, and that's done two things. It has elevated the cost of those cars
immensely,
and it also has brought them to a status that they never attained before. Because look, I'll tell you something. When I was a kid, and you look, I saw a couple of Countaches on the road. The first thing, and this is why it was in Wall Street, the first thing you thought when you saw somebody drive that thing was, that guy's a douchebag. That was literally it, right? Because this car was so so like loud and so over the top that,
sure.
this was not a car that anybody with like quote unquote taste would drive,
okay.
right?
Yes.
It was like you had a lot of money and you wanted the world to know. I grew up in the Chicagoland and I lived next door to Hinsdale, which is one of the more expensive suburbs. I went to Northwestern. That has Winnetka and Wilmette. Once again, some of the more expensive suburbs. So there were Countaches around. But whenever I saw one, I always thought, this guy is just showing off his money. And what you can do when you come and revisit those cars is you can take something that's a little douchey and you can make it much more collectible by kind of delving deep in the world of Countaches. And I'm seeing that happen, right? People are like watch collecting, right? There's subtle differences between the years because that thing was in production for, God, a long time, 15, 20 years, something like that. By the way, the Diablos are also coming up now, the follow-up to the Countach, right? Because the Countaches have gotten so expensive, so the next car in the
sure.
lineup is coming up. So what you do is you make it much more of a collector thing than of just showing off. But at the end of the day, I still think those cars represent the loudest, the most... I'm not going to say vulgar, but you know the kind of the worst of the Miami Vice era, right? Where the bigger the boat,
sure,
the bigger the party, right?
But look,
the bigger the bank account.
As car enthusiasts, just as enthusiasts of anything,
yeah.
there has to be aspiration, and no one is aspiring after a 1984 Escort. You know,
this is true. So, you're right. Yeah.
So there's
for
a
sure.
reason that these cars are aspirational, right? And they were the. I mean, your argument is that they probably weren't the best cars in the era.
Right.
Right. There were much better cars that were much more reasonable, but they were rare and, you know, they were few and far between is the same as rare, but they were crazy. They were ostentatious and they were over the top and they had these loud V12s and they were insane. So that's going to drive collection for anything, right? It's like, why is a designer handbag worth 100 times what you could buy at Target?
It's the brand.
It's the brand, yeah. right? It's because it's the scarcity of the brand. And I think in that car, it's also certainly has to do with the insane wings and flaps and whatever. But there's always going to be those aspirational cars. And that's kind of the Bugatti right now.
Remember when we started the Classics Channel, we profiled a Countach?
Mm-hmm.
And I sat in that thing, and then the guy had to back it up, and he had to sit on the sill to back
it up.
I mean, those things are pretty crappy. They look like kid cars.
How would you...
I cannot get past the fact that it looks like a kid
are
car.
Are you sure this isn't just... a little bit of jealousy.
No, it's not jealousy. I have zero interest in any of the classic Lamborghinis. And the Diablo, remember when we profiled the Diablo? The guy showed up in this Diablo so we could profile it, and he rolls up, gets out of it, and he's barefoot. And I'm like, why are you barefoot? And he's like, well, because my shoes can't work the pedals because the footwell is so small in that car. And the compromises that these cars made in terms of like visibility, in terms of drivability, in terms of like usability were just so great that for me, I'm very pragmatic and very practical. They never appealed to me. Remember I got to drove the Rambo Lambo?
Yeah.
That also was a kid car. And that had the big old V12 Lamborghini in it. And Victor, thank you for letting me drive it. And I got in that thing and I floored it. And I was so underwhelmed by it.
Sure.
Right? It was just compared to modern cars, compared to that G-Wagon that we have sitting out there, it was just so cool design, but once again, looked like it was built, you know, out of bits and pieces that somebody had laying around.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat.
There's no jealousy there, really.
Okay. I've never really aspired to owning supercars. I think even if I could afford a supercar, which is doubtful considering the insane supercar inflation we've seen, apparently... I just learned this on Doug's podcast that Lamborghini Countach was the equivalent, if you factor for inflation, of $150,000 in today's money.
Yeah.
And now a Revuelto is what, 500?
Yeah.
And the new Bugatti's 3 million.
Yeah.
So we've seen a huge inflation in these supercar prices.
I think the Chirons were actually up to 5 at the very
okay,
five
I don't
by the last like one. Yeah.
So part of it is that I'll never be able to afford one. But I think the bigger part of it, even if I could afford one, I've always kind of been drawn to cars that the little nerdy kids on campus, right? That's always been my personality because that's what I am, is a little nerdy kid on campus.
That's why we until 2 days ago, we owned 3 Model 3 Ford, Classic Ford, 2 Model Ts and Model A.
I like kind of the interesting, my favorite cars to collect are people's cars because they've had the biggest impact on society.
Volkswagen Beetles, and classic Minis.
The most historical significance, and I think that's really cool.
Duchevaux.
Sure, exactly, stuff like that. And I think that for me, those are a lot more interesting than something like a Countach that nobody will ever be able to own and afford.
And I walk the walk, dude. So, you know, my dream car was always a 911. So, you know, 2 years ago, I ordered a 911 Targa. I didn't want the sporty one. I wanted the cruiser one. We bought that for $158,000, which is, just a staggering and eye-watering amount of money for me. We kept it a year, and I just could not justify holding on to that car because I felt like there were so many other experiences I could have for that money that were more interesting and more fun than having, you know, this shiny red 911 sitting in storage, you know, where I drive it once or twice a month, you know, when the weather's good. So we got rid of that, and, you know, we got the i8, and the i8's been just a dream. I have a lot more fun driving that than I ever did in 9/11. Not that there's anything wrong with 9/11, but you know, for me, I just feel like at $48,000, that gives me a lot more smiles per mile than the Porsche did.
My hot take of the year,
let's hear it,
which is not going to be a popular hot take, is that the new 9/11 is currently the most overrated car on the market, and I think that it is an engineering masterpiece.
You mean the hybrid?
No, the one that we owned and the previous ones I've driven. I'm talking 997, 991, 992.1. I haven't driven 992.2. But the problem with these cars is they're engineering masterpieces, but they've been engineered to be fun at such a high performance level that driving them around at legal speeds or even semi-legal speeds over the speed limit is not an experience. They don't sound that good at low RPMs. They don't feel that quick unless you're really, really on them. And they don't offer an experience that I think is worth the money. I'm just gonna say it. Like that i8 we have for $48,000 used makes you feel more special and is more interesting to drive than $150,000 or $200,000 or $250,000 911.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And I'm sure they are very fun on a track or on a closed canyon road, but I don't have the balls or the ability to lose my license to be able to push a car that hard to experience that fun, which is why I love Beetles and Model A's, and they are fun at 25 miles an hour.
Classic World War II Jeep.
Yeah, and they're not only fun at 110 miles an hour.
Yeah, I mean we've never been the cool kids on the block, right? We've never collected these, and so I felt weird with that 911. My problem with the 911 is I love that car. We have the classic one, which you know has been nothing but trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Continues to be trouble. The roof once again stopped working, so we'll probably be getting rid of that as well because I need a car I can drive, not a car that I have to fix before I drive.
I do like that one a lot though,
because
that one partly due to the age, does feel like an experience relative to any other modern car.
It's just you can't drive it because the damn.
Well, it's just because the
roof stops.
Yes,
working.
Every three months,
I got to spend $5,000 on it.
Yeah,
but here's I love 911s because to me they represented like the everyman supercar. I know they're not classically supercars. Maybe the turbo is, right? But when you could get a 911 for $99,000, I thought that was a screaming bargain, right? Mm-hmm. You got all of the goodies that you would get in a GT3. Okay, maybe it wasn't as, you know, as desirable or as aerodynamically efficient, but basically you got the same driving experience for, you know, under $100,000. I thought, and I know that's saying, that's being crazy saying $100,000 is affordable, but it felt affordable in the 911 world. But now, because of COVID, you know, because of profit taking, and because all of a sudden the whole world has discovered the 911s with people paying way over sticker form, you can't touch an affordable 911 anymore. And that's a shame, because to me, that car was always the car that you could aspire to. And if you worked hard and if you got lucky in life, you know, you could afford that car. Unlike a Lamborghini or unlike a Ferrari, which have always been unattainable in my mind. Mm-hmm. So anyway, what other cars have died? Let's keep going. We kind of got into a tangent there.
So next up, we've got the Camaro.
Yeah. You know, I think the problem with the Camaro was that they just kind of lost the plot in terms of what that car should be. And it's easy to lose a plot when you have a halo car that sits under a halo car, right? You've got a brand new Corvette, which is mid-engined and which, you know, represents everything a supercar should be at a bargain. But then you've got this other car that's kind of a halo car that sits underneath it. And it's hard to sell that second halo car and make it as desirable as a Corvette.
Well, I think
it would be like, you know, like I think Ford did it right with the GT. That was, or the GDT, right? The
GTD.
GTD, the crazy Mustang. Well, it's Porsche, so much higher than the Corvette.
Porsche's done it, though, like with Cayman.
Yeah, but Porsche doesn't also sell pickup trucks.
Oh, what does that have to do with anything?
When you walk into a Chevy dealership, right? You've got SUV, 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 pickup truck, heavy-duty pickup truck, right? Mid-size pickup truck. And then you've got a Camaro and a Corvette. And it just feels, the two feel like they're vying for the same customer. Hmm. You see what I'm saying?
So my problem with the Camaro
is you sit too low.
No.
You do sit too low.
It's hard to see out of.
Yeah.
Fifth-gen Camaro, right? Launched 2010, and it was such, once again, it was a car, going back to the movie thing, it was a car that brought a lot of whimsy to the make for me, right?
Yeah.
Seeing it in Transformers, right? Bumblebee. And I was just sat in an early one at the used car auction recently. It was like a 2010. And you get in the thing, and yes, it's cheaply made, and yes, you can't see out of it, but there is so much kind of whimsy around that interior with these deep set retro gauges and the body color molding on the inside and the auxiliary gauges by the shifter, and it's retro, cool, and fantastic, and it just brings a smile to my face. And then I think the problem is that they got too serious with the car. They tried to make it a handling machine to chase Nürburgring time lap records.
Like the ZR1, you mean?
Yeah.
It's the ZL1.
ZL1, yeah.
ZL1, yes.
And the Europeans, right? And they were going after M3s, and then the 1LEs came out, and they were fantastic, and they were handling focused, and they got so serious, and were going lap times. But they should have gone back to more of that whimsy. And I think that's something that Ford has done really well with the Mustang, like our Mustang that we had our 2024. They had these cool retro gauges and different styles you could choose from and crazy kind of colors and California specials. And the Corvette got too serious, right? And it got too European, I hate to say it, where they should have just gone back to a big comfy boat with a huge V8 and retro gauges. And I know that's a little overdone, but it works. It's fun. It's exciting. It makes people happy. And instead, it just got kind of dreary and hardcore and it just lost the plot.
And you couldn't see out of it.
And then, like, with the redesign, they kind of botched the redesign. Remember, they had, like, that 1 year bow tie placement.
Yeah.
So I think that if they had continued in evolving and coming up, Americans, as much as car people hate to admit it, love a special edition. Like a 68 Cruiser special edition would have been really cool with a throwback to the original with crazy stripes and chrome and all sorts of bonker stuff. And I think that would have been really cool. And instead, they were chasing BMW and Mercedes, and they kind of lost the plot.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going on the track in the ZL1 in Harumph, and that car scared the pants off of me, Tommy, which is also, you know, they were hardcore. They are hardcore sports cars,
mm-hmm.
maybe, dare I say, race cars. And yet, I remember getting behind the wheel of the GT500 Mustang and thinking to myself, this is going to scare the pants off me. And the thing was a pussycat. So, I don't pretend to know the ins and outs of, you know, track handling. I know what appeals to me. I've never pretended to be a race car driver. I don't time myself on racetracks. But I can tell you that the GT500 felt comfortable and I felt like I was in control of it, whereas the ZL1 just scared me. I just felt like this was too much car for my ability. And maybe that's what you're talking about. That's kind of my simplistic way of defining the two.
No, I mean, I think mine comes down more to pricing and vision for the car.
Okay.
Became too handling focused, too focused on lap times when they should have been focused more on creating an exciting operator experience, which they did if you were on an autocross, but driving like a 1LE around every day, it was too hard.
I mean, you'd want a kind of car where you take it to a drive-in, not the kind of car you take it to the track.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree.
So apparently, according to Car and Driver, Chevy claims it's not ready to retire the Camaro name yet, and it plans to affix a moniker to a seventh-generation model in the coming years. I hope it's not some electric crossover, which it very well could be.
You know, like the electric Ford Explorer they sell in Europe?
That seems like
a stretch. Or the Capri. The electric Capri, which is based on the same Volkswagen ID.4 chassis, this is not. You can tell car companies are struggling when they're really like sharing platforms, and then not only sharing platforms, but sharing platforms, and then taking old names that once were classic and trying to, you know, I'm going to say flog cars based on the name and not based on the car.
Yeah.
I've been listening to a lot of the British podcast, and that's exactly what it feels like that Ford did with the Capri.
So Ferrari A12 died, okay, replaced by a 12-cylinder. Ferrari F8 died, okay. Fisker
not
Ocean.
Not our world. I was listening to the Consumer Reports podcast, and Everyone on their staff, pretty much everyone, called that the worst car of the year. What, it was half-baked.
Fisker Ocean?
Yeah, half-baked and left, you know, customers stranded, lost tons of money, and just, you know, proved just how difficult it is to start a car company in America.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, like, they had the right formula, pretty much a very similar formula to what Ineos has done with the Grenadier, where it was engineered and I believe even manufactured by Magna, did the Fisker Ocean.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Which is a huge mega corporation that also, Magna Steyr also does the G-Wagon production and the Z4 and
Supra.
The Supra and a lot of cars. This one, though, it just didn't work. It didn't hit and the quality wasn't there. And I don't think it was, from what I've heard, it wasn't even necessarily like the panel gaps were bad.
No, the software was bad.
But that's a classic example where a buggy, underbaked software set can ruin a car.
Well, look, we got that old, let's go back to Mustangs. We got that old 68 Mustang sitting in the barn, you know. There's no software in that thing.
Sure.
I mean, you know.
No, there's no software.
And what's happened over the years, and this is an acknowledgement I think that everybody out there understands, is car companies have become computer companies, and they're not good at being computer companies.
Well, we're in this era now. 2025 is going to be the year of, I hate this term, but it's the software defined vehicle, right?
Yeah.
Where the vehicle experience is driven by a computer rather than by an engine or a suspension or whatever.
And Tesla brought that. That is all on you, Tesla.
Sure. But I'm starting to see some pushback now from people my age. It's anecdotal. But my friends, and especially my wife, are getting pretty sick of software. Like Morgan, we were driving our little Fiat the other day.
Yeah.
Driving down to Denver, putting along. And an alert popped up saying, tow truck ahead. It came up on the screen, tow truck ahead, cut the music. I'm like, okay. Sure enough, it was right. There was a tow truck. Pretty cool feature, I guess.
Why is Fiat warning drivers of potential tow truck?
Yeah, so I was driving along and it was shot like it was like tow truck ahead in huge letters. It happened to me the other day too. I was driving by the house and it was emergency vehicle ahead. Okay.
I mean, I get the speed camera warnings. I see those, right?
It was warning me.
Red light camera warnings, but tow truck warnings?
Yes, and like it wasn't like that. It was pretty funny. It wasn't that the tow truck was in the drive lanes. It was like well off to the shoulder.
Did you not pay your monthly fee and you were worried that it might come and repossess
maybe
your
it's a Fiat thing actually maybe it knew it was gonna be on the tow truck, so it was like just a heads up if you need one.
There's one ahead.
The tow truck is ahead.
Exactly, it's right in front of you.
But so tow truck ahead, and then it stopped our audiobook and I could not for the life of me get the music to return to the system. Like it warned me of the tow truck and then cut all the audio.
Fiat repair shop ahead.
Exactly. Maybe Fiat just knows where the difference, where you're going to end up. It's got like
you know, there's that fix it again, Tony.
Yeah.
Does it tell you every time you drive by a Tony? There's a Tony coming up.
It's a prophecy. It knows where it's going
to
end up.
So it killed the audiobook, and you couldn't get it back to play the audiobook again.
Yeah, and Morgan and I tried everything.
Was this like an Apple thing?
Yeah, maybe? It was just Bluetooth streaming. It wouldn't stream audiobooks or Spotify or anything. It was bricked. So then I was trying to figure out why the car stopped playing music, and I had to go through this reboot process on the screen. I mean, it was a disaster. And if the car had not told me about the tow truck or just had an auxiliary cable that went to a phone, it wouldn't have been an issue. I mean, these are problems that I do not have. I have other problems maybe, but I don't have software problems with my 2006 Land Rover.
No.
Or my 1984 Mercedes.
No.
You know, it's got a basic radio and basic climate control. And what I'm starting to realize now is all these features that are being advertised and pushed and being charged more are great on paper, look good on a catalog, you never use them, right? So why are we spending all this money for features that we just don't need and don't want?
I also think because of Tesla, I'm blaming Tesla, but really they're the ones who pioneer this. We have gone off the deep end, not in terms of just computer defined cars, but in terms of like badly designed cars. And I can give you like five features that I hate. First and foremost, they got rid of the door handles. I mean, the excuse for that is that it's more aerodynamic, and if you're in an EV, you know, you want to have – but how much do you really save by getting rid of the door handle?
And right? That's
– making it retractable or hiding it. So like, you got your arm full of groceries, and, you know, if you have a door handle, you can kind of open the door. If it's retractable, you got to push or – you know what I mean?
So that's more online, too. That's a great point. That's online with this trend of electronic door handles.
Yeah, horrible.
And in theory, a couple of things that allows them to do – they don't have a restraint as to where they put the door handle, both inside and outside, because it's a button, right?
Yeah.
So that is potentially a pro. Another pro, which I'm realizing is not a pro anymore, is you don't need a mechanical linkage, but the car still has a mechanical override.
Well, so why does it matter? These companies also, so they get rid of the door handle, and on the inside, these doors are electric, right? So you push a button and it opens the door. It's electric. But that also means that in case of an emergency, you have to have somewhere a pull handle so that if the battery dies or if the car is dead, you can override the door and get out of the car. And in an emergency, if you don't know where, like in the back of our Tesla Model 3, that little pull handle was very well hidden. Mm. And if you had no clue, if you were riding with your friends and all of a sudden the car starts on fire and the electricity dies, you won't open that door unless you know where that little pull handle is.
Sure.
And the chances of like your friend knowing where that barely, we barely knew where it was.
Right.
Right. So hate that trend. The next trend I hate is where designers like got rid of the rear window. For fudge's sake, guys, really?
Or the other one.
Really? The rear window? You got rid of the rear window?
Rear wipers are also going away.
Yeah, that's always been a thing though. Actually, with the Kona, it was the Ioniq 5. They got rid of the rear wiper and then they give you this kind of word salad where they say the aerodynamics of the car allow us not to have, you know, and then it snows and your back window is covered in snow and you can drive it and now aerodynamics are going to get rid of the snow.
Right.
The Ioniq 5, they brought it back. So this trend of designers copying the design that the coolest kids on the block are doing is horrible. And I think the apex, the pinnacle of that is getting rid of the rear window.
Yeah, Polestar, I think that's stupid.
Polestar did that.
And like there's a whole other suite of features that I just simply don't use.
Here's another one.
I want to say some too.
Okay, sorry. I was trying to get my five in before.
No, we'll go back and forth.
All right, you go for it.
Amazon Alexa integration, anything like that where they're like, we've incorporated the Google suite.
Yeah, so our new Maverick has that now.
I really, unless it's Google Maps, I don't care about anything else. Give me Google Maps. I don't care about any other crappy...
You don't want AI-enabled cars?
No, I don't want... I don't need that. I don't want to have a conversation with my car.
Hey, Maverick, what's the population of South America?
All this, like, voice crap where they want you to, like, talk to your car like Knight Rider. Like, I just don't care. I really, unless it has the word Siri on it, I don't want to use it. If it's got MBUX or BMW iDrive and I'm supposed to say, hey, BMW, I've never used it. I never will. Same thing with those stupid gesture controls that like BMW does. I've never used it. There's so many crummy features out there. And then there's some that are just don't work, like active high beams. Don't want it. Just give me the button that allows me to turn it on.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot. all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Now I spend probably 50% of my time in press cars fighting the high beams on the country roads to my house.
Because
they're on off. They see a reflection.
So I'll give you an example. When coming from your house, you hit that T intersection.
Sure.
And there's a big sign there, right, that tells you that it's a T.
Uh-huh.
And if you've got your high beams on auto, what happens is there's no car there, but the reflection off that sign is so strong that it disables your high beams, basically,
right,
because it thinks that there's another car, even though there's no cars and you still need your high beams on. Yeah, I agree. Those auto high beams do not work.
Some of them are better than others.
Like
Volkswagen does it pretty well. I'm impressed with that.
But they sometimes turn on the highway too. Have you noticed that? Like they go on.
Yeah, but
in the city
on
the highway. Yeah, why would you even turn on your high beams?
On off.
On
I'm
the
like,
highway.
Oh,
in the city
and
with
then,
lights.
The worst is Stellantis, that Ram truck. Like they'll turn on and they'll turn off and then disable it. And then it'll like fight me to turn it off. I mean, it's a mess. The coolest one though is I was driving that new Rivian, Gen 2 Rivian.
Yeah.
And that is the first vehicle sold in the US that now has the adaptive matrix headlights. The first one that's been allowed to actually use it.
So the headlight pattern changes based on oncoming traffic.
And that's pretty cool. Now in Europe, I've seen it with like Golfs, where it'll really dramatically dim the high beam on the oncoming and kind of, you know, create a little gap so the car can zoom past without getting blinded. The Rivian's not that advanced, but it will alter the headlight pattern to allow cars to pass without getting blinded. So it's pretty cool. It's like still not as good as where they are in EU, but I'm glad that technology's
coming.
Well,
the problem with those auto headlights is if you don't have a switch for them, let's say you have a stock, right? Normally the way it would work is you've got regular brights, and if you pull them towards you, it flashes the bright, and if you push them away from you, the stock, it turns on the brights. With the auto headlights, I don't know which one does what. So I'm always like blinding cars because I got these stupid auto headlights, and I'm like, do I turn it off by pushing the stock away from me, or do I turn it off by flicking it toward me?
Yeah.
That's the confusing part.
And I think, just finishing this tangent, there are certain pieces of technology that are amazing and I love. Adaptive cruise control, we've got that down, folks. We've got that nailed. It works really well. Emergency braking, amazing piece of technology that everything should have. Blind spot monitoring, awesome piece of tech. But when it comes to interacting with gadgets in the car, I think things are getting worse. And in that Maverick we just bought, I was just poking my head in there, there's almost no buttons.
Nope.
No buttons.
Only the audio controls.
It's all on the screen, which drives me up the wall.
Yeah, so, hey, manufacturers, never ever put HVAC controls in a screen.
You gotta give me buttons.
Especially for like heated seats. Yeah, don't put them in the screen. And, so, here's another example for me. It's that rear view camera mirror,
mm-hmm.
right? That is gonna fail. You know it's gonna fail. And then you know it's gonna cost like thousands of dollars to replace, as opposed to just a regular mirror, which does everything that thing does, and it'll cost $22 to repair.
Yeah, for sure. All right, should we keep going to the next car that died?
Well, I had five of them, but we can skip them.
Well, we'll keep talking about
it. All right, go for the next car, yeah.
The Ford Edge has died. 18 model years, according to Car and Driver, introduced in 07. Now, it's slotted between the Escape and the Explorer. I feel like this kind of segment of car was really hot a while back. Like, you had the Mazda CX-7. You know, the Nissan Murano, and then there's been so many different segments in the SUV world that it kind of just got phased out. Although Nissan just did redesign the Murano, which is interesting.
Escape is also gone, by the way.
Yeah, Escape, well, that's because the Bronco Sport is so much better in every way, mm-hmm. except for the hybrid thing. Bronco Sport Hybrid needs to, is that happening yet? Mm-hmm. I don't think that's been announced. That needs to happen.
Let's actually talk about the picture behind us while we're there. We just bought, and this is a truck thing, but it's kind of a car. I think it's more car than truck, actually. We just bought the brand new Ford Maverick, And the reason we bought it is because for the first time, you can now get all-wheel drive and the hybrid. Incredible fuel economy, 40 mpg in the city.
Allegedly,
37 combined, 33 on the highway. We're going to test that. And we're going to find out if this vehicle is actually kind of an unsung hero. So the Maverick, of course, has been very popular. But in the truck world, I think truck guys never think about it as a truck, right? They think about it more as a car with a bed, kind of like the Honda. But, I mean, does have a functional bed.
Well,
it is very trucky inside.
I don't think that everything has to be a body-on-frame 3,000-ton truck, right? I think it's fine to have a little crossover ute thing. And Maverick has proven that. I mean, first-generation Mavericks, several years into the introduction, are still, in some cases, selling over sticker. I mean, Ford nailed it on that first launch with the Maverick.
Yeah, no. They've softened, Tommy.
Are you sure?
Yeah, Mavericks don't hold their value. It's weird. They were unattainable.
During COVID, you couldn't get them at all.
But their resale value is not plunging the way that EVs, but it's not as high as you would think.
So I do like the Maverick a lot. I haven't driven our new one. You just brought it into the office.
Yeah.
So we got the XLT trim, which is not the lowest. We usually like to do the more affordable trims.
Yeah, it all went wrong. Let's just face it. It all went horribly wrong.
The problem with the XL trim is it's very dark on the inside, which is really bad for filming. So it's like a sea of black, so that doesn't work.
So Maverick started once upon a time at $19,000. What a bargain. The two-wheel drive, front-wheel drive.
Yeah, hybrid.
Yeah, today it starts. I'll give you the tale of woe, Tommy. Today it starts at $27,000, basically.
Are we sure about that?
I'm sure, yeah.
Even for the XL?
Yeah. Yeah, it starts at 27. I can bring the Monroney in if you want to see it.
Well, that's XLT.
XLT starts at 27.
Yeah, I think XL is cheaper.
It might be 25. But anyway, so Andre wanted to get the cheapest one there is.
Oh, no, it's 27.8.
Yeah, I told you.
Yeah.
So it starts at basically 28,000.
So XLT starts at 30, which is the one we have.
And then we thought, well, we have to have the all-wheel drive with the hybrid. And so that adds another $2,500 on top of that. So now you're at like $32,000. And then Andre, of course, said, I need the tow package. It tows 4,000.
Sure.
That was 750. And then Ford does this funky thing where they package things. So you had to get Copilot 360, which was another $500.
Did we have to get that?
Yeah, you had to get it. It's like packaged along with the package that you wanted, which is initially the thought was that Tommy would buy this from the company for his lovely wife to drive to work. And so she wanted heated seats and a heated steering wheel.
We still might do.
Okay,
still is a potential.
But that added another $2,500 to it and also added a Copilot because it's all packaged together. So to cut this story short, we got a Maverick for $36,000,
yeah,
Tommy.
Which is a lot of money for a tiny truck.
Which is a lot of money.
Keep in mind, though, Tremor's still in the 40s, right? Lobo's still well in the 40s. Lariats are going to be more like 40. So we're still – look, 36 is a shockingly expensive vehicle. Unfortunately, cars have gotten so expensive by 2024 standards, it's pretty reasonable for an all-wheel drive hybrid pickup truck that has heated and cool and heated steering wheel. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, plus we didn't want that dour interior, which is the XL has this like black on black.
What we really wanted was the FX4 trim.
You can't get that.
Which you can't get with the all-wheel drive hybrid. You got to get the 2-liter.
Nor the Tremor trim.
That was disappointing. Yeah. But look, it's an important truck. A lot of excitement, a lot of interest around it. So I think it's definitely great that we got it. I'm really excited to see how that all-wheel drive hybrid system works. We're going to take it to Utah in about an hour. We're also going to put it on the TFL slip test to see how the actual all-wheel drive system works on the rollers. I think that's going to be really cool to see. It's not like I thought it worked. I thought it was going to be a Toyota all-wheel drive where it didn't have a drive shaft, just motors in the rear. It's actually more conventional than that. So I think it's a really cool little truck, and we got to be there. And look, I think that Ford nailed it. Hyundai tried to compete with the Santa Cruz. I don't think they got the pricing or the design right for the American market. Ford nailed kind of that rough, tough look, which is what people wanted. And I think even though it's gotten more expensive, it's still going to be a big, big hit for 2025.
Yeah, and I think I was thinking about this. I think for me, and we'll save this for the truck podcast, but it might be the truck of the year in some ways.
Well, I haven't driven it yet.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, well, it does have a CVT, so don't get too excited.
Okay, sounds good.
But it's a beefed up CVT, Tommy. All right, let's keep going. What other cars have died?
So we talked about the Ford Edge.
Yeah.
Oh, gee, it's all gone wrong here. Oh, the Infiniti Q50.
I'm surprised the brand's still around, to be honest. Infiniti has just been struggling along with Nissan, obviously, right? So the problem, I think, with Infiniti and with Nissan is they just have not had the money to invest in new product. And it's been rough going for Infiniti, trying to compete with Lexus, trying to compete with Acura, and the products, you know, have not been as let's say cutting edge as the competitors.
Well, I would argue the Q50 was a really
good car.
Competitive car 12 years ago.
Yeah, 12 years ago.
Twin turbo V6. All-wheel drive, a great look. It was a good handling machine.
Is that the red series?
Yeah. They also, first car ever to introduce a steer-by-wire system. People think it was Cybertruck. Infiniti was there first. They did have a mechanical backup still.
True that.
Unlike the Tesla. But really a cool car in 2013. But they didn't evolve it and they didn't push the boundaries. So when I was at the Nissan headquarters this past year, like last month I was there, doing some historical stuff, in the collection, Nissan kept a concept they did, which was a Q50. It was called the Eau Rouge, and it was a terrible name. It's a Q50 with a GTR engine, and it was such a good fit. That 3.8-liter twin turbo slotted in there beautifully, and you like concept cars are usually thrown together. This thing had the shrouding around the engine bay. It had everything. I mean, it looked like a finished product. If they had brought that car to market to compete with the M3, it would have been a success. I'm convinced of it. Now, they probably wouldn't have because that's too close to GTR for performance, but a 600-horsepower all-wheel drive Q50 would have been awesome. That is 100% what they should have done, but instead they just kind of left the car floundering. They didn't evolve it.
Well, I think the problem is it's a sedan. It was never going to – I mean, sedans are dead. Let's just put a pin in that.
That's what they're doing now.
So, I mean, the FX models. Remember the FX ones?
Yeah, those were very cool.
They looked like little baby sharks, right? Remember they had little teeth? Those were way ahead of the time. What happened to those? How come those didn't evolve? I mean, those could take on an Audi head-on or a BMW.
Yeah, they were cool, but they were really expensive.
Yeah.
And they were shockingly small on the inside.
They were. I agree. The room on the inside was – it had the magic of being smaller on the inside than on the outside.
They had this great look where the hood was long and the greenhouse was elegant, but the result of that was a tiny, tiny interior. So I think Infiniti's struggling right now. Nissan is struggling right now. QX80 is awesome. Armada's awesome. But a lot of the midsize Infiniti products aren't that much better than the Nissans that they're up-badged from.
So you mean like the Armada isn't better?
I think the QX80 is better than the Armada. But I'm talking about like the QX60, okay. Right? It's just not that much better than its Nissan twin.
And then FX, the QX, just kept – you know what I mean? It's a very confusing brand. Once again, it's so much better – to just have a name of a car instead of like an alphabet soup.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? Because then a new CEO comes in and says, and all of a sudden, F will be Q, right? And then the consumer's like, what? Who? Where? If I just finally figured out what the FX was. Now you're throwing QX at me? Yeah. I just Audi's got that same problem. And all the Germans, in a way, Mercedes now has decided that they're going to go with very long names. I mean, guys... somebody, please figure out the way you name cars and stick to it.
So also dead this year is every Jaguar, pretty much. Yeah. Actually, not pretty much, every Jaguar.
Actually, that's one of the cars I'm looking forward to driving, that new Jaguar that they just unveiled.
So E-Pace dead, F-Type dead, I-Pace, the electric one, dead, XF dead. A lot of...
Boy, talk about bad timing, huh? They decided to go all electric and stick with going all electric just when the world has decided that electric cars are the most hated thing on this planet and that we should go back to internal combustion.
Yeah, not great timing. No. I think that's not going to work out super well for them at this point.
But I am looking forward to that new one. What is it? The double... Is it 00?
Type 00.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to driving it. So Jaguar, I am in your fan box. I'm rooting for you. I hope, as opposed to everybody else in this world who just thinks that thing is horrible, I kind of like it. I want to drive it. Please let us get our mitts on that thing and let's get behind the wheel.
So also dead this year, Kia Forte. Car you probably don't think about that much, which is just the small little Kia, right?
Yeah.
But the Forte GT was actually a highly underrated performance car. It was like 200 horsepower. You get it with the manual transmission, turbocharged. It was really fun. It's got its limelight stolen by the Elantra N, so it kind of fell to the wayside. But Forte GT was really cool.
I did not like the Forte.
Why?
Well, I can't decide whether it was a car or when I went on the launch of it, it was pissing down cats and dogs, and I had such a hard time filming it because it was raining so hard. So you can't, sometimes you can't separate the experience from the car. Maybe I should be more professional, but I just had a really miserable time when I went on the launch of that car. It was just rainy. The drive was miserable. And maybe that reflected on the car. And it's not the car's fault. It also brought nothing new or exciting to it. It was just another small little, you know.
But it was affordable.
Yeah, it was affordable.
It was pretty quick.
The Civic was also affordable, yet it was charming.
Yeah, but
this thing had nothing going
on. It was fun, actually. I think the Forte was pretty fun. Yeah, I thought GT Fortes are actually a hidden gem.
Fair.
I don't think you've ever driven a Kia Forte GT.
I haven't driven
the GT. We've never had one at the office, but they're pretty neat.
I mean, I wouldn't put it in the Diamante category of affordable cars, you know, where everything is just tiny wheels and everything is just made of paper mache. But at the same time, I didn't think it brought – and it's odd because Kia and Hyundai always bring something interesting and unique, either design-wise or technology-wise. And this car, for me at least, the basic one had none of it.
It's not totally dead, though.
Yeah.
It's kind of being renamed and rebranded and reshaped. So the car we have outside is the replacement to the Forte. Yeah, K4.
I'm really looking forward to driving it.
Which is a great piece of design. I think it's a really good looking car. I'm really excited about what Kia did to the look of that thing.
All right. I think the next, I have an interesting take on the next car that died.
The Huracan?
The Sorento.
That didn't die.
Yeah, it did.
No, it didn't.
No. The Lamborghini.
Oh, the Temerario?
No, the off-roady one.
Storato.
Storato, yeah. So both Lamborghini and Porsche kind of got this wild hair up their design, you know what, to design an off-road version of their car. And, of course, Porsche did the 911 Dakar. Mm-hmm. And these guys, how do you pronounce it again?
Storato.
Did the Storato. And these were like one-off, unique vehicles that they did. And I think that both of those cars are the best versions of the Lamborghini and the Porsche 911 that you could buy.
Well, I think
I think they should think out of the box and try to flip it on its head and do more of those off-roady supercars.
Yeah,
as opposed to less. And I've heard a lot of journalists say that their favorite 911 by far is the Dakar.
And that comes back to what I was saying about the Camaro, where it's just whimsical. Like, it doesn't make sense on paper. It's not needed. Obviously, the Cayenne is going to have more capability than a 911 Dakar, what have you. But it's just fun. It just makes people smile, and it's just out of this world.
So, Porsche, build more of them. Why did you just do 2,000? You know.
Well, I think part of it...
They didn't make any money on it, right? Because they're selling it like 200,000 over sticker. So.
Oh, I think Porsche made plenty of money on it.
But you know what I'm saying. If the car is selling at 200 over sticker, you did not price it right. They could have made a lot more money.
Well,
right? They could have sold it for a lot more.
Porsche's figured that out now, and that's why the new GT3 is like 50 grand more than the old one. Even though they didn't change anything, they changed some things, but they didn't change enough is because they realized the dealers are taking a big chunk. I mean, it's the Ferrari model, right? You price it at demand minus one, and maybe they price this one at demand minus seven. So there was more demand than they expected.
So out of the 25 variations of 911 that now are, you know.
Sorry, that's how many you build, not prices, demand
right.
minus one.
Out of like the 25 variations of the 911 that you can buy now, you can build. There is no off-roady one. Why?
Well, because who would have thought they wanted an off-road 911?
But the 911 Dakar proved that people wanted
it. It'll be back. Trust me, they'll bring it back. That's not.
I don't think so. I think these car companies, the engineers, are too focused on the track to realize that a lot of the world does not track. I think Porsche knows that most of their customers do not track their cars.
Sure.
So if you buy a GT3 or a GT3 RS, majority of those people will never take that car on the track. But they will take it off-road. So build more Dakars.
They won't take it off-road, but they will take it down rough roads in Colorado Springs, and it's better at that.
Yeah, and what happened...
No one's taking their cars into the dirt, though.
What happened with the Dakar was because it's a car that is good off-road, it's also good on-road.
Sure.
Right? This does not happen with track cars. If a car is really good on the track, it tends to be really crap on the road because everything you need for the track makes it so much worse on the road. It becomes much more harsh to drive, right? The transmission becomes much more track focused. The steering is much more track focused, much twitchier, much more refined, much more focused. Whereas the exact opposite happens when you go off-road. So I would say that we just had the Raptor R, mm-hmm. right? That was one of my favorite trucks, not because it had, 720 GT 500 horsepower. that sounded glorious, but because the ride and the steering and the way that you sat up high looking over just made it such a joy to drive.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens with sports cars, except all these car companies, especially Porsche and Lamborghini,
they're going to do more of them.
They're not.
No, they are.
No, no. This was like a one-off, and they were like,
"That's what." Yeah. They were like, "Oh,
they were like, oh, that worked well, and then let's go back to building more track focused cars."
No, they're going
to
do more of them, and that's just what they do. Porsche has a long history of this. This is the only rear-wheel drive turbo ever made.
Okay, okay.
And look, then 10 years later, look, a rear-wheel drive turbo. It's called something different. So it's not going to be called the Dakar, but maybe it'll be called the Baja. They're going to bring them back.
Look how many like racetrack-focused cars Porsche makes, right? They have the GT3. They have the GT3 RS.
Your arguments,
they have GT4.
Your arguments are stunning. They're the best arguments I've ever heard. You're 100% right. But they're going to bring them back. They just don't want us flood the market with these Dakars, I think.
I don't think they're going to bring – I think it was a one-off. They should.
I'll bet you $5 992.2 has a new off-road e-trim. And did you hear what the rumor mill is? That they're going to bring the Dakar back as an option package on a standard 911. So it's not going to be its own trim. It's going to be like you want a 911 Carrera S with a lift package.
I don't, you know, it took Mercedes 5 years to actually bring an off-road version of the G-Wagon, right, from the factory to the market. 5 freaking years, right? The thing came out in what? The next generation of G-Wagon came out 2019. It's now 2025, and finally in 2024, they came out with an off-roady G-Wagon, even though...
Well, every G-Wagon is off-roady.
No, I'm saying like specifically off-roady where you add like the stuff that Ineos would have. Right?
I think the Pro came out in 2019. They launched that thing with it.
Did they launch
it? Yeah. If anything, they actually discontinued it. Did you know that? So this newest generation now doesn't have the off-road stuff. They haven't introduced it yet. So
that's what I'm saying. There's no off-road version of the G-Wagon. It just recently came out. I don't think it's called the Pro. I forget what it's called.
It was called the Professional, I think.
Was it?
The G550 Professional.
Let's see if there's a new one. Google it. I'm pretty sure there's a new one, and it just came out. But it took them like 5 years before...
They did one in the previous pre-facelift too.
And
it was been out.
What year?
23.
So it came out in 23.
Yeah.
What do you get with a G-Wagon Professional?
It gives you tires. It gives you a spare tire. It gives you a roof rack.
Well, I guess they did have the G-Wagon squared.
Yeah, and then you had the squared. So I don't think that argument really holds up on that. They're going to do more of them, Dad. They're going to do more Dakar type 911s.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm quite convinced of it. So next car that died is the, pretty much every Maserati has died, including the Ghibli. Now, the funny thing about the Ghibli is it has got to be the single generation car that has the biggest price swings from new to used. So the 2024 Ghibli, just looked it up, started at about $109,000, and you can buy like a 2014 or 15 for 15 grand or 10 grand. It's like 10% of the cost, and it's essentially the same exact car.
You remember when we reviewed the Ghibli?
I remember.
We bought it from the dealership.
Yes, that was 10 years ago now.
Yeah, and the first thing that struck me was that it had the switch gear out of a Chrysler 300.
Yes, and it still has the switch gear. It's really not very good.
It's kind of hard to have a Maserati that has the innards from...
Yeah,
Chrysler,
and the same thing with the what's the big one? The Levante.
Same problem.
Yeah. That's also dead. Yeah. Same problem. So expensive, and just not that nice. And then the last one that died is the Quattroporte. The Quattroporte was nicer.
I like the Quattroporte.
Yeah, Quattroporte actually did have some pretty big differences from the Levante and the Ghibli. You could also get it with the V8 engine option, which was really cool. But the Levante and the Ghibli, although the Levante you could get with a V8 as well, were pretty bad.
Yeah, and the biggest problem with Maserati in my mind, Tommy, was like they never, I don't know the history of Maserati, so I wasn't around when that brand was in its glory days, but they never seemed to have found like their own unique identity outside of the Trident on the front of the car. But they always felt like they were chasing either Ferrari or Lamborghini or one of the other Italian supercar manufacturers, but I never felt like, except for the Quattroporte, I never felt like this brand had an identity that, and of course, the other issue is reliability was horrendous.
Yes.
Here's our identity. We're Maserati, the Range Rover of Italy.
Well, that's what they've been trying to do.
The Range Rover of Italy.
I think that's kind of their whole thing, actually, is pretty much what they have been doing. But the Grecale is still around. MC20, right? Their hypercar or sports car is still around. So, yeah, not going to miss much of those three that died. Mini Clubman also died. The four-door station wagon-y Mini.
Ooh, Tommy
is no more.
Mini is so lost right now.
And well, there's a new generation. We got the all-new Countryman. We got the all-new Mini Hatch.
Yeah, not good. Not good.
What's wrong with them?
Yeah, they're just – I mean, I love Mini. It's one of my favorite brands. One of my favorite trips we ever took was when we took the previous generation Clubman Clubby on the Autobahn.
No, that was the current generation. Well, that's how
gone.
Old it is.
It's gone now.
Yeah.
But I was just at Spartanburg with BMW, and they had – I test drove, I think, three different Minis. I test drove the new convertible. I test drove the new SE Countryman, the all-electric, and the regular Countryman. And, yeah, they have become fully
– new hatch. I don't think you drove the convertible.
Yeah, I drove the convertible.
Did you? It's yeah. out already?
Oh, yeah, I
didn't
know it was out. Yeah, already. I drove the convertible. And yeah, there was this kind of – sometimes when you get two countries that merge, like Britain and Germany, you get the best of both. You get like British sense of styling and sense of luxury with like German reliability. With Mini, you got the exact opposite. It's just like it's like the Brits trying to design a German car. And it's been heading that way for a long time, but now it's completely become – German-fied, it's Anglophiled, but what's when it's German? And it just isn't working. The thing just isn't working. The Mini has become very big, so it's no longer Mini. All that's left of that kind of go-kart, you know, handling is a little graphic that appears on the display, but actually when you drive it, it doesn't have that go-kart handling. The best of the bunch is the electric Mini SE, the new Countryman SE, the regular Countryman. I mean, if I were shopping for a Mini, I'd want a Mini. And this thing is, I mean, let's face it, it's no longer Mini. I don't want a big Mini. If I want that, you know, I can get myself a HRV or a plethora of other small compact crossovers. Why is this thing not actually Mini?
Because Americans don't buy small cars, as the Fiat has demonstrated. It's just a sad reality.
No, I can't. You can't put Mini and Fiat in the same sentence.
Why not? They were back in the day. They were the tiny, affordable city cars.
Yeah. Well, we're long past those days.
So Mitsubishi has killed the Mirage and the Mirage G4. Now, this is a car that everyone journalists hated. I actually don't think it's that bad because they've been known to be fairly reliable. And they were also so cheap when they first came out. They kind of crept up in price. But they were so cheap that they were competing more with the used car market than the new car market. But they were kind of affordable little runabouts that offered no soul or joy to driving. But you could get them with the manual transmission. And they seem to have lasted quite a long time. I still see a bunch of them out there, which is pretty unusual for, you know, what's a really, really cheap little car.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mitsubishi is certainly an unheralded and unrated car company. And part of that is, you know, they're also struggling with financing and struggling with you know, having the money to compete with the big boys. And so it's a brand that isn't on most people's mind unless they're looking. The only way you get a Mitsubishi is when you're looking for a bargain. And that's a bad place to be in the car market.
After 16 years, the Nissan GT-R has also been pulled off the market. The Godzilla, the R35, is no more. This car, of course, once again, such a legend when it debuted, you know, 16 years ago. Crazy, crazy world-shattering horsepower. We did see a lot of price creep in this car. Remember, they were like 80 grand when they launched.
Yeah, and then when the last edition,
now they're like 220, which is insane. But it's a car that will be missed because it was once again kind of a Top Gear halo car for people my generation.
Well, not just that. I think it defined what that generation looked at supercars.
Yeah,
were affordable. It defines a supercar
and more affordable.
And I think what killed it was it was known for being one of the quickest cars you could buy. And then, of course, electric cars came along and just completely wiped that off.
Yeah, that is a good point. That car was very much defined by its 0 to 60 time in a lot of ways.
In 3 seconds. But then now when you're talking about like Plaid's getting 2 seconds and Lucid's doing 2, it just kind of changed the bulb. But it changed the game.
It had a lot of cool kind of innovations with this all-wheel drive system, which is super unique, and its transmission was pretty unusual, and the launch control was insane. So very cool car. That one will be missed. Nissan Titan. Also dead for 2025 model year.
Like I said, it's hard to be the budget vehicle in any, you know, segment of cars, and that's where the Titan ended up.
And they tried three generations of – two generations of Titan, two generations of Titan, right? And I always liked the Titan.
I do too. I love that truck.
But the public never really caught on with it. And it's partially, I think you're right, it was kind of like the Titan was raced to the bottom from a price standpoint. They were just being discounted and discounted. And it never felt like you were getting a premium good or a quality good. Even though it was a really high quality truck, the perception wasn't there. It was the, so in India, remember the Tata Nano, which was supposed to be the people car that revolutionized India? And it failed. And I was talking to some folks in India why it failed. And it's because it was viewed as like a joke car. People want to feel like even at a low price point, they are getting something of substance and quality. And the Tata Nano was never that. And that was kind of the Nissan Titan problem, where it was a product of substance and quality.
But because of the brand reputation.
And the perception and these dealer prices. There was a while there where you could buy a Titan and get a Frontier for free, right? Like that's not – buy one, get one free does not scream this is a quality item in the automotive space. And
what's funny, I love going to Nashville because that's like Titan City.
So, yeah, you see them everywhere
everywhere
in Nashville.
Because they're headquartered in not Nashville. What's the town called?
Franklin.
Franklin, yeah. They're headquartered. We're running out of time, dude.
Yeah, we got only a couple more. Okay. Ram 1500 Classic. DS truck, gone. Yep. Good truck. Still good in its final model year. Really liked it a lot.
The problem with that was like crash safety standards, all of that.
Yeah, the world's moved on. But Hemi power, it was good. I liked it. And then the Venza, speaking of another car in that Ford Edge class.
Crown, replaced by the Crown.
Crown Signia, It was a good car, actually.
Yeah, it was a placeholder.
Yeah, and the problem with the Venza is it wasn't differentiated enough from the RAV4 or like the Lexus RX or NX.
It heralded the coming of these tall, quote-unquote, sedan-like crossovers, right, where old people, I'm saying that, getting close to that, have a hard time getting in and out of.
The Venza had one really cool feature when it launched. I'm trying to remember what it was.
I like the look of it. It was a big open maw.
I think it was one of the first SUVs, not the first car, but the first SUV that had that opaque to clear roof that you could transition. I'm pretty sure the Venza.
The first time I saw that was in a SL.
It was a Mercedes, but I think the Venza kind of popularized that in the standard segment. I could be wrong about that, but it was a nice car. It was comfortable. It was hybrid. It was pretty efficient. All-wheel drive system, it worked. It was an old person car, let's be honest, but it was functional.
So if you're watching this, behind us is me showing the brand new cars we bought at the end of the year. One is a Maverick, the other is a 2001 Range Rover P38. There's a whole story there. We'll talk again next time because we're about to take these cars through the mountains after a snowstorm to Moab, so wish us luck.
That's right. We're going to try to make it all the way to Utah with an unknown Range Rover and a little tiny truck.
And we'll see you next time. Ciao.
Thanks for watching, guys.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.